Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the GGB Podcast. As always, I am your host, Jess Marquez, and our guest today is Andrew Cardino, co-founder and chief technology officer at Quick Custom Intelligence, to talk about Andrew's globetrotting career, the growth of analytics and gaming, and QCI's reunion with VizExplorer last year.
Today's GGB Podcast is sponsored by Coin. Built for how guests move, Coin keeps payments in the background, so the experience stays front and center. Learn more at coinpayments.com.
These days, it's all about the data, and few industry figures have more experience with the highest levels of tech than Andrew Cardino, who traveled from the south of New Zealand all the way to the U.S. to help lead the gaming industry's analytical revolution. Cardino and Dr. Ralph Thomas have built their company, Quick Custom Intelligence, into a high-tech powerhouse, and there's still much growth ahead. Cardino and I spoke via Zoom in March. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Jess. Looking forward to today's conversation. I had a little bit of a discussion with you beforehand, and I think we've got some interesting stuff to talk about. Maybe you're going to challenge me with some difficult questions. Is that right?
We'll see. I mean, as you talk, I'm sure I'll come up with new ones on the fly just to kind of, you know, I gave you the ones that we thought we were going to do, and then I will actually do different ones depending on how you answer. So that's typically how we do it. But, you know, it's funny. It's interesting. You know, we both are based in California, but both have very different paths for getting there. So it's kind of funny, you know, I always like to start these interviews, obviously, with some backstory on the guest. And I've known you for a while. We've been around QCI for a few years now, and you guys have been a great partner for us. But I've never actually really, I don't think we've ever really sat down and had a conversation like this before. And I'm curious to kind of learn more about your story and your backstory, how you came to be where you are today. So what is the, you know, you don't have to go through line by line, obviously.
We'll be here. That'll be the whole show, yeah.
Yeah, the truncated version of how you got there.
Incredibly short version. I was looking for a place to start my company, you know, the business that I'm in, and actually visited a bunch of places. Was living in Las Vegas at the time, in fact, and thought, you know, what else is there in the world of in America? And just came to San Diego, and I thought, and at that time it wasn't expensive, right? This is in 2008. And I just thought, oh, this is it. This is incredible. And I chose a place that was a little bit away from downtown. I just love it here. Yeah, I think today I probably would have picked somewhere else because it's so crazy here now. Like, I think it's become one of the most difficult places to move to in the world, even. Like, it's gotten like that, but it's still beautiful. And I really enjoy the concentration of tribal gaming here in Southern California. I think there's a lot of great business partners here. We've formed some wonderful relationships with some of our tribal nations here, and we've been able to really build great tech because of that.
So I want to get to, obviously, all things that you guys are doing currently at QCI. But, you know, what kind of before that happens, though, if we could go back a little bit, like, what is your background and kind of like how did you kind of get in? How did you become one of the main math wizards of the game, math and data wizards of the industry today? Did you kind of have an academic background or kind of how did you get into that side of the industry?
The genesis of it was some work that I was doing with retail companies and looking at retail merchandising with some large companies like Shell. And along the way, I've worked with Walmart and Best Buy and some other massive retail organizations. Initially in Australia, actually, I was working with large retailers in there. I'm from New Zealand. I was working in Australia. And I remember the day I discovered gaming data, right? And it was a day, I don't have a tape measure. If I had one, I would hold it up. Like, I had a tape measure, and I was in a retail store, and it was one of about, I don't know, 300 retail outlets, big place like a Costco in Australia. And I was measuring where the shelves were, thinking, I'm going to do heat mapping on these. And I thought, I'm going to be here forever. And it was a massive effort to map this out. And somebody said to me, have you looked at the inside of a casino? And I was like, I guess not really. Like, I mean, I think I'd been to one. There's not a lot of casinos in New Zealand at the time. And I'm from the deep, deep south of New Zealand, a very remote place, 3 million acres of rainforest, where in places it gets 30 feet of rain a year, and there are definitely no casinos there. Actually, there is now one nearby in Queenstown, but at the time there wasn't. And I went and saw, I saw the data. You know, every gaming machine is basically a bunch of computers producing data, and you know where it is. And I was like, oh, the things that I'm doing with retail merchandising are going to be really easy in this environment. I was a part of the team that purchased the casino for $600 million. I can see that now. I was sworn to secrecy long enough ago now. It was in 2000. Actually, I think 99. They bought it, and then they turned around to me and said, now you have to make it profitable. Because this beautiful casino in Australia, I would say it's a six-star, you know, gorgeous property, best part of a mile long, absolutely a wonderful property, wasn't making money. And we were able to turn that around in 6 months, and we added, I think the number was $75 million in after-tax profit in 6 months by doing merchandising optimization. And for that, I was given a Smithsonian Laureate for, actually, I think my second Smithsonian, my first one was telecommunications, for heroism and information technology. And I thought, gosh, you know, I'm going to move to America with my family. So my wife, two kids, three suitcases, got off the plane in Los Angeles, and we're like, okay, we're in America. Let's do business. And I can't say that was the smartest idea in the world. Like, you know, don't, you know, to anyone listening, don't do that, right? Or maybe you should do that. I don't know. Like, now I'm here, and I didn't understand what it was or the scale, the volume, or anything in America. But I certainly came here to America, have become a citizen now. I loved it. I love working in America. I love the business. The scale, business's scale of data is just amazing. This is such a data-rich country. So for those data nerds like me that like data, this is where all the business data is, right? And in one place, it's incredible. And bought merchandising of gaming data to the industry, you know, in the way with contour heat maps. And at the time, to make that work, I remember I was working with Harrah's, which is now Caesars, and I don't know what it's going to be next week, by the way, if anyone's watching. Maybe stations. I don't know. Who knows? Right. Okay. So anyway, so I bought this idea and this technology, and I was working at Harrah's, and we had to get this $1 million cluster of servers, and we were doing all this stuff to render these incredibly fine-grained, beautiful heat maps, like weather maps of money. And with a weather map of the money, it's like with the weather map, you really can understand the weather. With a weather map of the money, you can understand the money, right? And it profoundly true that humans are incredibly good at consuming merchandising layout data in that form. And today, the same visualization technique that I was doing 25 years ago now renders inside a web browser, right? It's crazy, right? Like, we've gone from $1 million worth of clustered to something better and more dynamic inside a web browser at 60 frames a second. Incredibly applicable still. Like, you can't, it's like if you imagine a weather forecast where we couldn't look at the map and you were trying to understand it. Now, okay, tell me what the temperature's going to be tomorrow. You could do that, but really understanding what are the movements, it just wouldn't work. Well, it's the same thing, right? You get such deeper insight and action. Along the way, Jess, I realized that you had to really understand customers, and that brought me to database marketing, CRM, customer-facing apps, all the other things that we do today. You know, it just grew from the realization that once you have curated the data, there are so many other things you can and should do with it, because we are the most data-rich industry in the world, I think.
So it's fascinating, and I think that, I mean, From the south of New Zealand all the way through up until the south of California, as it were, that's a fascinating story, and you know, one of many that I've heard in this industry, but a very good one for sure. When exactly? So you came to the U.S. about 20 years ago, or thereabouts.
Sure. February
28th, 2001. 2001. So okay, so
10 a.m. in the morning.
Gotcha. When did the idea for QCI, how did QCI come about specifically, and how did you get hooked up with one Dr. Ralph Thomas, who is your co-founder, I believe, correct?
Yeah, so I met Ralph. He was at Seminoles. He was the head of marketing. He was actually at the time building a data warehouse. Now, I had been building data warehouses at that point that I met him for quite some time and built a lot. Like probably because I designed the original Teradata warehouse, not the one at Harris, but I did changes to that to make it geospatial. But the standard model that was deployed everywhere and then deployed data warehousing and business platforms. I know I've lost track of how many casinos, but I was trying to count them and I got to like 300 and I was like, okay, it might be 700, but it's a lot, right? Where I've led teams to build their platform. I walked in and he was busy trying to build one himself. And I was like, okay. So we built this massive, very low cost data warehouse with the Seminole tribe. And I met him. This was when I was working with VizExplorer. Wildly successful project. Actually won an award by the one of the award the he won a couple of awards with that, like big global awards, best in the whole tech world for that work, right? I think the Data Warehouse Institute best practice on a budget, and then another big award, I don't remember the name of it, but it was really well received. And we just realized that there was some kind of crossing of ideas that happened between the two of us, right? Dr. Thomas is, I like to tell a story. He doesn't, so I will. Yeah, so he finished his master's degree at Chicago University at the age of 20. And he funded it by, apparently, so has been told, how's this, by counting cards underage in casinos in Chicago. Apparently, so I've been told that the first time he was carded, he was more than 20. And he was accepted into Harvard, I think Harvard and Princeton for his PhD, finished his PhD at Princeton. It didn't work. And at Princeton, they're very serious about math PhDs. And so they didn't give him a PhD. So I think he got his second master's and then did another PhD at UNLV. And while he was doing that, he was commuting backwards and forwards. So he was in the middle of a PhD. I was working with him in Seminole. He would come over to Las Vegas, where I was at the time. And we were backwards and forwards doing this really, really cool stuff. We started writing together. And it was my dear and no longer with us friend, Peter Mead, who said to me I should write. And I sat down and started writing with Ralph and writing with actually Professor Singh. And that's turned into what is now our 15th, this is actually the 14th, our 15th book. Some of them are updates to the edition, but a 15th book together. And we've written the story on how to drive revenue in gaming. And writing together is an incredible way of becoming really deep friends. We decided to found QCI together in 2000, and it went something like this. I called Ralph, because I was starting my own analytics business. He was starting his, and I was like, you know, Ralph, we probably shouldn't compete. And that was a really tough conversation for both of us. You know, what do you mean I'm going to give up half of my company, you know, become partners? And gosh, what a great decision that was for us to work together. Like, what great, how complementary we are. And we have very, very difficult academic discussions about all sorts of things. He's fiercely intellectual. And so I spend a lot of time debating different things with him, I guess. People watch it might say it's like a debate. Like, we're really, really going at these concepts hard. That challenge has pushed me to different levels. He might say the same. Like, it's so the partnership, the writing, the dedication to learning, changing how we do things has been the foundation of QCI, and I think is what allowed us to grow in this insane age we're in right now. There's fantastical technology we're sitting in the middle of, and everything's changed. You've got to rethink all your ideas about how you do everything. Like, and it's like, it's awesome. And having a partner like him to go, okay, what about this? What about this? What about this? As we build out this new agentic world that we are in right now. Like, it's not happening. It's happened, right? It's like, yeah. So that's Dr. Thomas. He's a great partner. I'm really proud to be in business with him.
So I think it's interesting how, you know, you often hear these stories about these very high level partnerships. And I think that's a common theme amongst them is like, in order for stuff like this to work well, there has to be transparency. It has to be honesty. You can't be afraid to really hash out these ideas, especially at, you know, when it's that high of a level as you two gentlemen. One thing that I kind of am parsing out. So you mentioned a couple of things there that I want to talk a little bit more about, but I'm kind of parsing out how to exactly do it chronologically. So one thing that I wanted to talk about is the VizExplorer acquisition or reacquisition, as it were, which is kind of a big part of that. So about a year ago now, last July, I believe you guys announced that you were acquiring VizExplorer, but in actuality, it's kind of, again, it's like a reacquisition. So could you kind of just explain that deal and kind of what the history behind it?
Yeah, so I founded VizExplorer. And I met Ralph while I was at VizExplorer, and he actually came on to VizExplorer. We were having a great time together there. It's a long, long story of what happened there. It was not easy, but I'll stick with the facts, right? We were running a successful business, funding a very expensive litigation defense against Bally Corporation. I think there were 6 patents that were attempted to be enforced against us. We won that patent litigation. As a result of winning that patent litigation, I lost the company because the cost, right? Like, you know, you can win and lose. So when we started QCI, we were competitors with VizExplorer, and we went out into the market and I think it's fair to say we beat them in the market and we were able to bring VizExplorer back home again. And so many of the customers we're working with, I think, were so happy. Like to the next generation of technology was really the technology that VizExplorer maybe should have built, right? Certainly it's what we built and we were there, so we would have had we stayed. But that, we go to these customers and they were on the old version of the Andrew and Ralph technology and now they're on the new version. There's just a natural synergy. Like, and with software, there's a standard of software about what it does, and then there's a style. And our style is one of enablement through data. That's how we like to think. You know, we really want you to see and understand and work with and know what you're doing. And that's how we like to do things. It's a very transparent way. And so users of the old software, I think, felt that. We've had wonderful, wonderful reactions from the customers as we brought them in. It's been a wonderful merger. And I'm really proud to have my old company back. You know, I feel like, so now I can say I started it. I don't know how to put it together. Whether we started in 2008 or 2020, but yeah, that was the merger. It's been great. Just where it leaves us today is there is a unbelievable amount of research and development, an unbelievable amount of money that you have to spend today to, you know, tens of millions you have to spend just to be like current with what's happening, right? It's extremely difficult to tackle the problems we're solving. And it's changing so fast. So with VizExplorer, we've gained this kind of critical mass. We're big enough to really tackle some big, complex, great things that the industry we think really needs. And we're certainly hearing that from our customers about where we're going. Like our customer partners are telling us what they need, and we're just going at it now. So the combined group is big enough to be really make a difference in this age of absolutely wild transformation.
Definitely. And it's interesting, you know, reading back through the materials that were put out at the time, it was like so interesting to see all the quotes of like, this is such a full circle moment for us. This is like a true part of the story that it feels good. From a technical perspective, like a nuts and bolts perspective, what about Viz Explorer was important to bring under the QCI hood and kind of the combined offerings from the two? Like, what is the how was your portfolio bolstered by what Viz Explorer had or that you brought back under the umbrella?
So, I think there was a couple of things that were really important, and to understand the first one is sort of to understand a little bit about what I did. I traveled a lot at Viz Explorer, and you know, I had a young family, and you know, and I was traveling. Just to give you an idea, you know, you get to platinum status or diamond status on an airline, the top level. It's pretty hard to do. And you know, a few people in the world managed to do it with two airlines at the same time. I had four, where I was maximum status with four airlines simultaneously. And you know, I was traveling every day. The work and effort. Now, okay, that was personal. Obviously, that's a huge personal commitment. But the people that I met. So I went out and met people all over the world, everywhere, all the continents, everywhere. I met these people, I learned, and getting Viz Explorer back, all those relationships that I'd spent a decade traveling the world, seeing, meeting, engaging, learning what's important, you know, what's the difference between Australia and Chile and France and in Canada and all across North America, right? And, you know, and so having that back is kind of intangible, but amazing, right? Because those people are back again, their business, right, from all over the world. The second big thing that happened was the team that was there were amazing. Now, I remember when I walked in the door and I met with the team, and I was like, because I wasn't sure we could do this. And I was like, I don't know how you're doing it, but you're doing a great job. They were amazing. And it was because of that team. So we brought on this really incredible group of people. And I think that was probably the best thing. It was the relationships and the customers and the people that came with it who were doing such a wonderful job. It was only because of the people that I thought we could do it. And I would say now that was correct. The other thing that Viz Explorer has a lot of intellectual property. There's a huge IP portfolio. There's some 30 granted patents, and there's a really great patent that we now have around predictive gaming, for example, right? That was very early. No, there's some really, really interesting intellectual property there, and that's important. You know, if you think about my experience of Viz Explorer in Bali, you know, we have one of the largest IP portfolios in the industry now, and very early. So that's an important part of who we are. We've got intellectual firepower, and I probably more than anyone understand the importance of that, having been on the receiving end and having nothing to defend myself with against a public company.
Certainly, certainly.
This episode of the GGB podcast is brought to you by Coin. When payments fade into the background, better experiences come forward. Coin helps operators support how guests naturally move through moments without interruptions or added friction. Secure, flexible, and designed to evolve, Coin integrates into existing environments while helping operators deliver more connected guest experiences. Learn more at coinpayments.com.
If we look at the business today, all your current efforts at QCI, what would you say is your guys' kind of biggest priority? Like, what are you working on most currently, and kind of what are you working towards? So as in terms of maybe it's like expansion efforts, maybe it's products, maybe it's both, all things, but kind of what is like your main priority right now, and what do you hope to be, you know, moving forward?
Yeah, so, well, firstly, we're growing incredibly fast. we're growing at 50% compound, and we're growing in gaming, we're growing out of gaming, we're growing, you know, all over the world, right? Business is very strong right now. So the first thing that we're doing is making sure we're doing a great job of supporting our customer partners with great new product that's really robust and really supportable at scale. And you know, if we must keep our eye on that ball, right? That's the we're in a very complex industry with very complex regulatory constraints. I was talking to, I won't name the state, but I was talking to the state police, one of the states, yesterday. I think it was yesterday, on a video call. And I'm like this is what it takes, right? Like, this is how we operate. So we have to be really dialed in to making sure we do a great job there. And and even when I look at that, I think there's so much tech that we've built. There's so much opportunity for doing new things just with what we've done over in the current product stack and our current version 56, which is what we have now. So you've got your first, that's your first big pillar. Don't lose sight of the fact that you've got a very fast growing, very successful software as a service company that's growing horizontally into new industries, horizontally within the industry we're in, horizontally across countries, right? It's just growing everywhere, right? Don't lose sight of that. But put that aside for a moment. What are we thinking about for next year, right? And it's agentic. We have, you know, I'm a deep artificial intelligence guy. I studied it formally. I was doing neural networks when no one else was doing neural networks. I was training them when in the middle of the neural desert, which is a period of time between about year 2000 through 2012, where nobody would thought that they could do anything useful, except a few people like me who was practicing them and doing really well, right? This AI agentic transformation that's happened means that, you know, we as a business have to completely change. We have to, right? There is no future for software as a service companies the way they were 4 years ago. I just don't see it, right? The only future, right, internally within our company, we have to be using agentic tools to run the business, develop our technology, support our customers, grow our business, analyze our business. We internally, I mean, don't even worry about the product. We're all over this. So we've rebuilt all of our internal, a vast portion of our internal tooling. So for example, I don't use email anymore for any internal communication. We got rid of it because we've figured out a better way of doing it. Just as an example, right? It's an integrated part of what we call Jarvis. It's doing our customer support. It's doing tickets. It's doing missions. It's doing project management. By the way, we've plugged agentic into it, so it's become intelligent. Like, we have to use agentic technology to run and drive our business and develop our new software, and we are all over that. And that is a agentic transformation for us as a company. I think that it's something we were very early adopters of large language models. Like, as soon as they came out, we pivoted and started doing it. And I think we're going to continue to push that. There is no other way. I can see it working with tech. And it's this kind of transformation. Just this hasn't, I don't think, happened since the internet, right? Like, and the internet came along, and people, I guess, you know, before that, was there fax machines? I don't know. Like, what's a fax machine, right? If you've ever seen one, right? Like that's how people used to communicate.
I am that old, barely.
Okay. Well, fax machines. It's like, wow. Like, there used to be companies who made fax machines, right? That was a big deal. That now, I think printers do it, but, you know, they basically don't exist. So the World Wide Web came along, and nobody knew what the future was going to look like. There was the .com. There was all this change. We're in one of those moments again. And And so now, and going forward with our, you know, what we're offering to the world, you know, what we're building now, you know, is agentic. It has to be. You know, there is no future for traditional software that I see. It all has to be completely agentic. And if I could share a little bit, like, how it feels for me personally as a software engineer, which is my professional training. You know, in my graduate classes, that's what I was studying, and I practiced it my whole life, right? Like, I am a software engineer before I'm a data scientist, even. I just love it. I love software engineering. When I started doing agentic development, and I felt it, experienced it. It was like driving a car, right? It was like first time you've gone from a bicycle to a car, like, wow. And you're like, you know what? Going to be biking anywhere anymore, right? And it's that kind of change, right? For me personally, it took me a number of weeks just to realize I've got to let go. Like, it's hard. Like, I would try to say, oh, I can do it better than AI. I'm like, no, I can't. No, this is no competing with this. So personally, this has been very traumatizing for me, like, to make this change. It's personally, it's like my whole life I've learned this skill and it's gone. Now I've got to learn a new skill, which is great, but my whole life it's gone. It's like, wow, I'm not going to be a programmer anymore. I'm like, that's right. I mean, no, you're going to be an agentic programmer now. Like, wow, okay, that's a big change.
Honestly, it's fascinating to hear you talk about it, considering that, you know, ever since I came into this industry about 5 years ago, I have, you know, someone like myself who goes to conferences and hears people talk about all these range of different topics. And obviously, in a time like this, you know, for the last maybe 2, 3, 4 years, every single time that you can insert AI into a conversation, you know, you do, and you say, oh, it's very glitzy and glamorous and all this type of stuff. But I think I realized kind of very quickly or within a short amount of time that for all the talk that there is about AI and that type of, and like these type of technologies, that there's really not that many people who are actually, you know, doing it, so to speak, or actually have the capabilities and the brain power and the electrical power to do it. And I've always felt like you guys definitely are one of those few. I mean, as you said, you have the intellectual power. I definitely think that that's true. And, you know, when I hear you guys talk about it, it's different. I'll say it's different than hearing other people say it, like, in a buzzwordy kind of cliche way, generalized way. I like to hear it, talk to it more of the different experts.
Jeez. Yeah. It's, for me, it's traumatizing, right? Like, yeah. I think, you know, what I'm producing objectively, personally, right, as a personal engineer doing this, like, as, you know, you wonder, well, why would I do that? Right? Why am I doing this? Like, I've got all these people. Like, it doesn't work like that with agentic. The people are the agents, and you're tasking agents, and the ideas that go into it, that you're like, ideas and creativity become engineering product automatically. Like, wow. And so you need that industry expertise. And it used to be you had to have these teams of product design and architects and all this stuff. Now, I've fulfilled all of those roles in my time. Like, I know how to lead teams. I know how to do architecture. These are things that I, you know, from the bottom to the top, I've been all the way through. That, I think, is an important characteristic of why I have been able to do so well with agentic programming personally. And the team that we're building to do that, that's the kind of people we're looking for. Like, It's not something you can hand off. There is no hand. If you need to hand something off, you just give it to an agent. They are incredible, like, incredibly productive, incredibly good at what they do. So now you're sort of up the top, like, directing this army of computers to do stuff. My wife was joking me. She's like, do they make fun of you? They kind of do, right? Like, if you say something silly, they kind of tell you. They're very polite about it, but it's. I've become, like, I think today I spend more time dialoguing with agents than I do with humans, and I think
another year of doing this, I might not be able to talk to humans properly anymore. Like, it's sure. It's getting a bit weird, right? Like, I'm just talking to computers all the time, and they're talking back to me, right? They're doing things, they're giving me their opinion. Like, last year, Jess, to give you an idea of volume, last year I did over 11,000 prompts. And this year, so far, I don't know the number, but I would guess it's, I don't even know, way more than that. Like, because I've got agents producing prompts now. It would be, I don't even know, like, anymore, like tens of thousands, right?
Wow.
You know, when you start having agents write prompts for you, I don't even know what you count anymore. And it takes a lot of practice to get good at prompting, and a different way of thinking, a different way of approaching the problems, and no feature, no thing kind of matters. The whole development life cycle gets turned upside down, right? You can rip out entire components in an hour and put new things in and build huge systems. It's like all this control of this huge army of resources. I don't know who's making the power bill, but my agentic bill is crazy.
You know, it's interesting. So in all this conversation about AI and neural networks and large language models and et cetera, and all these nebulous concepts, I actually wanted to end, and thank you so much again for your time, but I wanted to end today kind of going back to what we talked about earlier, which is your guys' book. So we're going from the internet and high tech to words and papers. Tell me a little bit more about kind of the impetus that went into the original, like, you know, writing the book in the first place. The math that gaming made, that's right. You're now on edition 14 or 15, 15, I believe.
15 is coming out for IGA. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I actually think you might be able to buy it on Amazon today. I've seen copies of it. So it's glossy.
Gotcha. So tell me a little bit more about kind of what into that, what inspired that. And also kind of what I'm wondering is, like, who is the ideal audience, like, for the book? Is it something that's like for like a consumer, or is it somebody like in the industry? Like, who is the book for?
Well, so what inspired it, it was Peter Mead, right? Like, I don't think I would have done it without my dear friend, Peter. He really pushed me. I was very nervous about the first article, so I wrote something very geeky. I think about TCP/IP or something, if you know, networking. Like, I was, and he's like, Andrew, go harder. He was like, call me. You're great. Do something else. And I realized that business and math and gaming are kind of intertwined. I just started writing more and more and more complex ideas and bigger and bigger and bigger stories. He let me write these 12-part series together. I was like, I think one of them was 18 parts, 18 chapters. It took me a year and a half. You know, you write in all this stuff. Well, what happens when you do, when you write that volume of stuff? There's a lot of organization, you know, like in academia, right? Like, you're thinking and writing and putting together and creating this huge body of work on database marketing, on slot optimization, on table yield management, on cybersecurity, on data sovereignty, just writing and writing, developing the ideas. And so a lot of times people today will ask me a question on some, almost anything in gaming, right? And I have a pretty good memory. I often will remember what I wrote about it. And they're like, wow, Andrew, you've got such a great ideas. I'm like, no, I spent 5 months researching that topic. It's 18 years of writing. There's a lot of material around how to drive value in this amazing experience economy and business that we're in. So, in terms of who could consume it, we actually wrote the book backwards. We started out with all the really got really extreme. Like Professor Singh, Dr. Thomas, and I, we were like all in on some crazy math. I think about 18 months ago, I sat down and wrote the Beginner's Guide to Database Marketing. And then we incorporated a lot of it. So, and then we reordered it. So it's actually chronologically goes from new to old, but it reads from, like, okay, if you want to be a database marketer and
And it's a great book on database marketing because it just goes through all the bits. There's so much you have to know to be a database marketer. It's all there. It lays it all out. And that's the beginner's guide. And then it goes through some of the things like, you know, tribal sovereignty. Why is that important? What does it mean? Things you need to know to be in this industry. Also, Buddy Frank kind of took our glossary and turned it into what I think is the definitive glossary of everything in gaming, like, which is like he, and every so often we find some new term, and we just keep adding them. and so, it, you know, who could read it? Anyone in the industry now could read it. From whether you want to start from day one and just what is it to the end of the book where you're going to be doing some of the hardest computer science problems in the industry, right? Like it goes all the way, right? And but it's more than that now. So now you go, okay, we've written a book, 700 pages, it's a textbook, it's becoming like I think something very, every time we release a new version, it just gets a bit better and better. And we're doing it like software like that. I tried to write it as a big bang. I just couldn't get it out the door. So we think, you know what? We're going to use an agile book writing approach. We'll just keep iterating. Eventually, one day, it'll be the perfect textbook. Or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it'll never be perfect. But it's getting better. But we took that book. We put it into a generative engine. Now, you can talk to it inside QCI. You can talk to the book. That is bonkers.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I'm confused. So the book, you can interact with the book on QCI is what you're saying?
Yeah, there's something inside QCI called QCI Assistant. You go into QCI Assistant, and all of the book is there, and you can talk to it.
Wow.
Like, that's next level. All of that writing, all that knowledge, and it combines it together with all the other knowledge in the world, and it is incredible to have a structured template for what you should do in this industry and how you can do it. You can ask questions like, how do I make more money with slots? And it will tell you. How should I do my database marketing? Right? It will tell you, right? It has all of that knowledge in a generative engine. So I always thought the book was like this academic exercise that would never be useful with a product, but amazing to do. It's transformed into a core part of our intellectual property in the product. Like, unbelievable.
Well, you know, to a certain degree, right, Andrew, like the name speaks for itself, right? Quick custom intelligence. That's I don't know what else you could ask for. It's all there for you. So that's, again, the math that gaming made for anybody interested. It's available, new edition is available now or in the coming, maybe when this comes out, it'll already be out.
I do believe it's on Amazon right now. Yeah. I haven't bought one yet to test it, so I've been told it's on Amazon right now. I think it's there. It should be there, yeah.
But it is glossy, though.
It is glossy. I've seen printed copies. That's right. It's glossy and beautiful, and a lot of work went into the editing of this. Hannah McCall, who has really took it as a personal mission to get it working in a really cohesive way. She's done amazing work. Like we're really proud of where the math that gaming made is today and how it's become a part of an agentic platform at QCI. Like, who would have thought?
Definitely. Well, again, from the south of New Zealand to California, AI, big tech, everything in between. You're a fascinating guy, Andrew. You have a fascinating story, and your company is definitely on the cutting edge of something that's definitely very much essential in today's industry. So I will, as always, be watching all things QCI. And tell if anyone is interested in finding you, how can they get in touch with you or QCI?
I'm actually quite hard to get a hold of because I no longer read my emails.
Naturally.
I scan them. So yeah, probably the best way is to send me a LinkedIn message or go to the QCI website and send an email from there and hopefully someone will track me down. But I've become a little bit of a agentic recluse as I build all this coding.
Definitely. Well, thank you again, Andrew. It was great talking to you.
Okay. Thanks, Jess.
Thanks for tuning into the GGB podcast, sponsored by Coin. Designed to integrate with existing operations, Coin helps operators support today's guests and tomorrow's expectations. Visit coinpayments.com to learn more.
We thank you for joining us on this episode of the GGB podcast. For more about Andrew, QCI, and all things gaming, visit ggbmagazine.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the GGB podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.